Voter suppression has always been a problem in America. It can take many forms, but most recognizable are things like poll taxes and literacy tests. This week on America Interrupted from the PBS NewsHour, we explore what voter suppression looks like in 2020.
Stirring up confusion, making voting inconvenient, putting obstacles in the voters' path, sharing misinformation with voters.
Who's being most impacted? And why, after a century of expanding access, this is still happening today? Listen and subscribe to America Interrupted wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, Paul Tough, thanks for joining us. Helping Children Succeed was a follow-up to an earlier book. So why did you feel the need, first of all, to write it? What were you after?
Well, so in the previous book, How Children Succeed, I focused on the way that certain non-cognitive skills, things like perseverance, grit, curiosity, mattered a lot in young people's success. But one of the things that I didn't really get a chance to address was where those skills come from. And I found that that was a question that a lot of researchers were still asking. And so that's why I took on this new project, that I really wanted to explore the deep research of where these skills come from. And what I found is that they really come not from sort of training. You can't do a lot of, you know, grit worksheets or curiosity practice. Where they come from is the environment that children grow up in. And trying to influence that environment is a very different and sometimes a really complicated question.
And the focus really became on children from lower income families, from more challenged backgrounds. How did you end up defining the subject, in a sense, that you were exploring?
Well, yeah, I mean, I was interested in these two questions at once. One is, in all of my reporting, going back to the first book I wrote, I've really been concerned about children who are growing up in adversity or in poverty and how those environments affect them. So I knew that was a big part of How Children Succeed, though not all of it. But I knew that I wanted to focus more on those students. And I also felt like we were in this moment where so much of American education was focused, especially with those students, on test scores, on improving test scores. And there was a lot of research that I was seeing that was suggesting that that wasn't really the right place to focus, that we needed to focus more on children's environment, on the way that they were growing up, both at home and the experiences they were having in school, in a broader way, if we wanted to really solve the problems that a lot of kids were having.
So you get into some specifics, and some of our readers ask specific questions about some of these issues. James Shulo of South Miami, Florida. In the book, you write about how optimism helps students achieve their goals. Can you describe the tools a teacher can use to help students understand that their environmental space is important?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would say you're right. Optimism absolutely is important. I think it's also, though, important that teachers don't just say, you know, you can do anything. You know, it's all like what I found, especially in this book, is that the right kind of challenge is really important for teachers to deliver to students. Making sure that they feel that they're genuinely experiencing work in the classroom that pushes them, that challenges them, that makes them feel like this is maybe just a little bit beyond my reach. And then give them the sort of support and encouragement that they need to master that, to actually succeed in these difficult tasks. And I think that's a really hard balance for teachers to get right. You know, I think there are some teachers who just make their work kind of impossible and only a few kids succeed. And there's others who just you know, focus on those wins and don't really give students the kind of challenge that makes them truly believe that they have the ability to succeed.
Here's a question about early childhood from Lisa Pinot of San Antonio. Can you provide your thoughts on why daycare centers are not preschool equipped? Why early childhood workers are poorly paid?
Yeah, why that happens? I mean, I think that really goes to our national priorities. When you compare the way that the United States deals with early childhood education and you compare it to other peer developed countries, we put a lot fewer resources, a lot less emphasis on those early years. And that's, you know, really contradicted by the science. It's really clear that early childhood education pays off in a big way, and especially what you might call early childhood education. That what we do for the environments in the earliest years, which includes supporting parents, I think as much as out of home daycare or pre-K, It matters. It matters a whole lot. And there are other countries that I think are reflecting that science more in their public policy. I think the United States is moving in that direction. We have more pre-K than we did a decade ago, but there's still a long way to go.
You wrote the book some years ago, and a lot has happened since. Of course, now in the midst of a pandemic. A question that goes to that, is there one approach to early childhood learning covered in your book that you keep coming back to or see as particularly effective in helping students in adverse situations develop the kind of skills that ensure success over the long term?
Yeah, I keep coming back to supporting parents. So again, I think pre-K is important, and I think it's great that we're expanding it. But especially for children who are growing up in adverse environments, those first 3 years when they are more likely to be in home environments with parents, they matter a whole lot. And there are interventions that are now sort of scientifically proven that can work directly with parents, supporting them, encouraging them, encouraging what psychologists call serve and return parenting, the kind of calm, patient, back and forth interactions between infants and parents. Those pay off in such a huge way. And I think we're reluctant sometimes to do that because it means getting, you know, the government involved in home environments. But parents who I talked to and reported on, they are really eager for this kind of support. And when those programs are tried, they work in a big way.
How extensively are they? Have they been tried?
Well, they've certainly been demonstrated through research. So there are lots of, you know, randomized controlled studies that show that sort of early intervention works. They have not been replicated in widespread programs anywhere near enough. So there's some good programs that I write about in the book, but they're still mostly small and isolated.
All right, a question about homeschooling from Jean Burback of Portland, Oregon. I hear little patience and much frustration with the current homeschooling scene. The parenting classes I taught in the 80s have been out of vogue for a generation. What programs are available to offer a crash course in being your child's best teacher, instilling values, especially instilling values in non-cognitive skills, always beginning at home?
Yeah, well, this is a pressing question because we're so many of us, including my family, are homeschooling right
now. Homeschooling is in a big way now, right?
Exactly, whether we want to be or not. I totally sympathize with the feeling that you just don't have as a parent teacher, you don't have enough support, enough knowledge. So I can't point to a specific resource that says this is how it's done, but I do feel like the research that I wrote about in this book has certainly had an impact on me as I've tried to be more of a home teacher, that it's not just about finishing worksheets, it's not just about covering material, it is also about thinking about your child's psychology, about how they're thinking about the challenges that they're facing in school, and helping them through that process involves a lot more than just sort of pushing and encouraging. It involves really getting them to think deeply about challenge, about their sense of who they are in the classroom. That's hard to do as a homeschooler, but I think it's really important to consider that side of education as well.
All right, a question about teacher training from Gene Struthers of Los Altos, California. When the government sent teachers to National Science Foundation summer programs for math, science teaching, we got major improvements in the teaching of math and science. That was in 1960. Now we need help teaching poor kids self-respect and desire for learning. Do you think these types of training programs for teachers could help them improve their classroom techniques and thus reform the system? And what kind of training is available now?
Sure. I mean, you know, teachers are getting a lot of training. There's lots of professional development that happens. It is mostly, when you talk to teachers, they would agree it's mostly sort of scattershot. It's not very, it's not always really well organized, and it's not always responsive to the questions that they have. So I think we need to do a better job with teacher training in general. That includes in education schools, but also in ongoing professional development. And I do think that teachers are hungry for this sort of information about this kind of deeper teaching, deeper learning. They know that it's not enough to just deliver content to their students, that they also are really concerned about their students' character, their psychological well-being, their approach to school. And so I think there are more and more professional development undertakings that focus on social emotional learning, that focus on this sort of character development. But I don't think there is yet one good national curriculum that teachers can turn to.
And one more from one of our readers, because it goes to the big picture here. Chris Carey of Pittsburgh. I like the review at the end stating how few students have been touched by these means of change. How do we make that number larger? That, of course, the key question, right?
It's a great question. And it's really why I wrote this book and why I'm excited to do this kind of conversation, because, you know, I do think that governments can make a change, that there are specific policies that states and the Department of Education nationally can develop to increase the focus on this sort of non-cognitive development in students. But I think it also has to come from a more grassroots level, from individual teachers and from parents and citizens as well. So it's why I think it's important to that this science that I write about be more broadly understood, that more people get exposed to these ideas, because I think it changes not just your idea about education, but your idea about childhood, about what's happening as a parent. I think about this research all the time. And I think once you undergo that sort of paradigm shift and understand the importance of non-cognitive skills, it changes your thinking about policy as well.
All right. The book is Helping Children Succeed, What Works and Why. Paul Tough, thanks so much for being part of this with us.
Thank you very much.